From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made this Friday, February 17th, in the Rochester City School District. Friday is Black Lives Matter Day in Rochester schools. It's a day that is not formally connected to the national movement, but it came from a grassroots effort. Parents, teachers, students, and it has the support of the Rochester Board of Education and the Rochester Teachers Association. So what's the plan for Friday? That's what we're going to discuss this hour. Teachers are not required to present lessons or lectures on the subject, but many are planning to do so, with focus on criminal justice reform. What happened at Ferguson? Comparing the phrases Black Lives Matter to All Lives Matter. Those kinds of discussions and a lot more. So let's talk about it with our guests for the hour. Luan Brown is an assistant principal at Joseph C. Wilson Foundation Academy and a co-organizer of the event. Luan, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
Chris Widmeyer is a science teacher at World of Inquiry School number 58 and a co-organizer of the event. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
Atuma Kung is a student activist. She's a senior at the World of Inquiry School and a co-organizer of the event. Atim, welcome to you as well.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And Marian Mustafa George is a parent and co-organizer of the event. Marian, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having us.
Well, I'll start with Luan, doesn't have to be you. I was going to start with you. I'll start with all of you since you're all co-organizers, but where exactly did this start, Luan, as far as you understand?
As far as I understand, it was a grassroots organization, and I think it was spearheaded when the students at the World of Inquiry, their soccer team, took a knee during the national anthem, and a core group of teachers, students, and teachers and students and administrators got together and wanted to do something in regards to Black Lives Matter at schools.
Yeah, listeners may recall a conversation on this program with some of the students and some parents from World of Inquiry this past fall when those conversations were happening. And, of course, a little bit more context, what Luan is talking about is some of those protests, those shows of solidarity around the country came following Colin Kaepernick, the San Francisco 49ers quarterback, who engaged in his own form of protest in that way. So that's kind of how it started, Luan. And when did you know that this was going to be an actual day at school? I mean, in other words, I think some people are thinking, you know, can a school sanction this? What's the process like? How did that happen?
I think I'm going to have to throw the ball to Chris because Chris is really the one that spearheaded a lot of the work that's being done.
Okay.
But when I knew that I was going to be involved in it is that you can't wait for the next Malcolm X or Martin Luther King. This has to be done by ordinary people because they were ordinary people when they started. So that's when I knew that I needed to be involved in something like this.
Okay. And Chris, so when did it become an actual school sanctioned event?
A couple of weeks ago, the Rochester City School District School Board voted to pass a resolution in support and encouraging teachers. But a couple of weeks before that, the Rochester Teacher Association had passed a similar resolution, and the ASAR, the Administrators Union, had also passed a resolution. So those were the three key events that made it formal and made it encouraged and supported by the organizations that work within the Rochester City School District. But, you know, we started it off with some conversations that were happening, and Maureen had reached out to me about things that had gone in Seattle. The Seattle's union had passed some sort of resolution and had a day of affirmation and understanding. And so we got together, we got a committee together and a group of people, and we involved the Black Lives Matter Rochester organizers in that committee. And we started with, what should we do? We need to do something. And I was inspired by the dialogue that the students had on your show and how they were able to discuss with people that...
The World of Inquiry students.
The World of Inquiry students, yeah. And how they were able to discuss with people that were critical of their actions very articulately why they did it and why it was important. And so we wanted to open up the space for those kinds of conversations and dialogues in the school. So we said a day of would be a good place that would be a starting point as well, that it wasn't about like, well, we'll just do this once and be done with it, that we said this will be a way for us to organize around things, but we've already done training with at least 60 teachers and opening things up and lots of dialogue and conversation happening. So it's open to any school that wants to participate. Schools outside of the district are also participating as well.
Yeah, listeners, if you have questions, there is an FAQ on their website, which is blacklivesmatteratschool.org, if I have that right? Mm-hmm. So there's an FAQ there, and you can get a lot more information there if you want to know a little bit more about the background or the approach. I'm using Black Lives Matter Day at School, but that's kind of shorthand. The full name for what they're doing is Black Lives Matter at School, a Day of Understanding and Affirmation. And again, that's this coming Friday. Marian Mustafa George, a parent, you're kind of co-organizing here with everybody mm-hmm. here. How did you get involved, and what's your vision for Friday?
I got involved through learning about the Seattle movement that happened there, and it was a school-based movement to bring in dialogue and discussion about racial justice into schools. And I read about it, and I thought, you know, our district's demographic closely matches that of Seattle. And in light of the action that our soccer players had taken, we had talked in our school community about it being a teachable moment and how we could really do the same thing here and use it sort of as a galvanizing tool to further that discussion. So we've been at this since November and slowly been putting pieces together. And really our vision for the day is to have dialogues about racial justice and race in schools.
In class.
In classes.
Throughout the day?
Yeah, and mm-hmm. as we're learning, different schools are going to be approaching this differently, and we aren't dictating how people would like to engage in this. There are schools that are going to be using their whole day. There are schools that are going to be using a portion of the day. What we're saying as organizers is however you would like to affirm Black lives and understand, create dialogue and empathy, that's really what we would like to see happen.
Okay. And Tim, who is a student and a student activist and a co-organizer of the event at World of Inquiry, what do you expect to happen on Friday at your school?
I expect workshops going on throughout classrooms. Personally, I'm a band student, so my goal is to have a class run where we're learning about the history of African American music and culture. I just hope to see teachers who allow open dialogue about things that many of us may not agree on or many of us don't understand. So it can be a day where we are learning what's going on and what the movement is about.
Okay. Listeners, if you have any questions, comments, in support, any concerns, it's fine as long as it's civil. You can call the program. It's toll-free. 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI. If you're in Rochester, it's 263-9994. I'm going to start with an email we got from a listener who does have some concerns, and I think this will help us allow our guests to kind of address some of these points because I know you've heard them before. This comes from Tim in Pittsford. And I'll read his whole email. He says, I guess I'm confused how the city school district can be behind this day in their schools. I have heard the memo that was issued to the school district employees, and it sounds like some sort of recognition or lesson program for this is almost mandatory. What about teachers who may not agree with this platform? Are they going to be looked down upon by fellow teachers, administration, or their students? I'm guessing it's going to be a little uncomfortable if students are coming from one class, which has an involved lesson plan on Black Lives Matter, then going to the next that doesn't acknowledge it at all. Also, is it true that the school district is selling Black Lives Matter t-shirts through the school district's website? What happens if teachers who are Trump supporters want to wear their Trump shirts on a different day? Is this going to be acceptable as well? Whether this is the city school district, which may really want to focus hard on the basics, like getting some kids to school or improving graduation rates, or my child's school district, someone else's political leanings should be kept to themselves when inside the school walls, left or right. That's from Tim. We'll go around the table. Mr. Widmeyer, what do you think?
Well, I think it's interesting that as teachers and educators, there's some principles that we established through this day and things that all teachers should be willing to do for all subjects and topics, that education is about developing relationships, advocating for justice, having honest conversations. And so this is just one aspect of the world that teachers should be prepared to have an honest conversation about in their classroom. Now, when it comes to the idea that Black Lives Matter, there's a lot of evidence in our society that there's inequity and there's injustice for Black people. And this is something that our school district needs to be able to talk about, needs to address. I think Atim said it very well, that having students be able to share their voice and what their experiences are is a very important part of this day. And I'd say that, you know, when it comes to the political aspect of it, I don't understand how justice and equality are political. Both Republicans and Democrats should be behind those ideas.
Okay. Luan, what do you think?
The majority of the students in our district are of children of color. So it's very important for teachers to understand where our children come from. If you don't understand where a person comes from, you're not going to be able to meet them where they're at in order to provide them with academic support. So it's just, it's unusual for me to understand that email because you have to understand who you're teaching. And if you don't understand who you're teaching, you're not going to get anywhere with these students.
I think Chris makes a point, Luan, that I understand to be saying to Tim, who emailed, that he thinks Tim's premise is wrong, that this is endorsing a political platform when it's not about politics and it shouldn't be about politics. Do you agree with that?
It's about humans, about human beings, human rights. That's what I... And if you want to say that human rights is political, then you can say that. But we're dealing with human beings, and you need to know who you are dealing with.
Okay. Marianne, what do you think?
I would echo everything that's being said here. And I think sometimes... the criticism of this event comes from a place where people assume that this is a political movement in schools, and it's not. It has was never envisioned to be a political movement. Like Luan said, this is a human movement, and I really do think that having discussions about race is difficult. It's difficult for all of us, but it's still important for us to engage in it because this is what our kids really need to talk about, and they're coming to us, and they're asking us these questions, so... We want to give them the platform that they need.
Okay. Tim, did you want to respond to Tim in Pittsburgh's email as well? Go ahead.
Well, personally, I feel like this isn't a day about politics. As everyone at the table said, I feel like this is a day of equality and understanding one another. I go to a school with predominantly African-American students, and our teachers don't reflect us. We go to a predominantly black school with predominantly white teachers, and there's nothing wrong with that. But at times it can be uncomfortable to be understood and have a voice in your school and in your community. It's disheartening to see what's going on around the world and in our country. So if we can do our part inside our school in a place of education and have open discussions about race and equality, I feel like we should do that no matter what your political standing is.
Chris, you mentioned that... The invitation is open for all schools in all places to make Friday a day where these kind of discussions are happening. Are you hearing from other districts?
I know that Brockport has organized a panel discussion that they're going to discuss lots of things about diversity, but that they have invited me and Luan as well to be a part of that. And some of the charter schools reached out to us, and I know that one of the, the Rochester Prep Schools is going to participate, and it's school-wide. So we have been hearing from other schools, and through our Facebook group as well, teachers that are just interested in it, that may not be engaging their whole school, but that are want to find out more and want to be part of that understanding piece, but then also trying to figure out what the affirmation piece means.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll see some more districts, suburban districts, embrace it or have conversations as well. Parents, let us know if something is going on in the districts where your kids may be going to school if you want to call the program, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. All right. Dissent is fine. Civil is good. Bruce in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Bruce.
First, I want to say that I support the CDC's move to have better reporting on these types of incidents happening out there. So much of it goes unreported or reported poorly. Secondly, I support efforts to take the investigation of these incidents out of the local police's hands. It really has to be taken out to either a state or a federal level group that it doesn't have skin in the game. It really needs to do that. And third, I don't like the term Black Lives Matter, and I hear that it's predominantly, you know, black versus white. But when you look at the population in the United States, there are more whites than blacks. So when you talk about numbers, you know, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics. And, you know, I think that what we really should be focusing in on is that it's more about poverty. And certainly Latinos and whites and other kids that live in poverty are prone to this as well. So I want something that's more inclusive. And I know that they say, no, you know, we're fighting for this. We're fighting for our people. And it's like, we're all our people.
I said, Bruce.
And I'll stand right next to you, but don't split us.
Bruce, can I just ask you a question? And by the way, it sounds like you're calling from like an airplane in another dimension. It's not a great connection, so try to make sure you're right close to the phone there.
It's probably not the phone. It's probably just me.
Okay, there you go. If the phrase were Black Lives Matter too, or Black Lives Matter also, would that change things for you?
It really is still splitting and saying that people don't believe that, you know, that they do matter.
And society has shown, though.
I really think everybody of conscience truly believes it. And I don't think it's a racial line. I think it's more of a poverty and, you know, these incidents don't happen mostly out in the suburbs, and whether you're black or white. They're happening in areas of poverty. And if you look at the numbers of people within there, and I think you'd see the disparity amount go down. Now, I'm not going to say it's going to go away. It does happen more, and it's wrong. Absolutely, that is flat out wrong. But no, I want to focus in on the true problem, which is poverty.
I've got to cut the call there, Bruce, only because I can barely hear you. But I want to, first of all, thanks for calling. I think I understand the point that you're making. I want to let our panelists respond. But I would just say, Bruce, you know, if you want to make the point that class gets left out of intersectionality too often, I think there's a discussion there, and we should have it someday. But if you want to say that, you know, these events only happen in urban areas and it's only about poverty, that is not borne out by the facts. It's just not. But I do appreciate the spirit of the point you're trying to make, and I want to let everyone respond there. So let's kind of go around the table. Luan, you want to start? Go ahead, please.
I mean, if you want to look at poverty, why is there poverty? I mean, there's systematic racism that has existed in the United States for 400 years. So that is the reason for a lot of the poverty that we see in this country. And it's important to recognize race, because for so long, we have not talked about it. Black, white, whomever, we have not talked about it. We kind of ignored it, pushed it away, thinking when Obama was elected, we thought, oh, everything is going to be great. Everything is not great. We still need to talk about it, get this stuff out and talk about it.
Okay. Mr. Widmeyer, Chris, go ahead.
I can also understand, I'm white, and there's a privilege that comes with being white. And part of that privilege is that we don't experience this racism. And we can't relate to it in any way whatsoever. So our job as white people is to stop and listen and hear what people are saying, and to not judge or try to downplay or try to say that things aren't as bad as people are saying they are. If the people that live in our community that are not white are saying that they're living this experience of oppression and they're living this experience of, you know, systemic racism and institutional racism, then it's something that we need to address and look at. And you know, I don't think in any way whatsoever does it divide us. It does unite us, because by all of us acknowledging our identities, me acknowledging the fact that I'm a white person and what comes along with that, and acknowledging that, you know, one of the principles of Black Lives Matter is unapologetically black. And that's doesn't threaten me in any way whatsoever. And I don't think it should threaten other white people as well. I think we need to honestly address things, and this is part of our effort, is acknowledging that Black Lives Matter is an important thing. And also brought up kind of the challenge of there are two things going on here, that there's the part of systemic violence and racism against black people in our society, and just that larger affirmation of Black Lives Matter. And so.
Okay. Marianne, what do you think?
I think that we need to have discussions about race and this issue of poverty. It's true. I mean, I would agree with him. But when we look at poverty, we look at the systemic racism that has allowed that poverty to occur. So we're talking about things like slavery, Jim Crow era laws, segregation, mass incarceration. These are things that are affecting a race of people. And so we need to have that discussion. And, you know, it doesn't mean that we are against people who are not black. This is actually a conversation for all of us to have.
Okay. Tim?
I feel that this day is a work in progress, and that not everybody is going to agree with it and everybody's going to find their problems with it. But I feel personally this isn't a day to pull people apart. It's a day to bring people together. If you don't stand for something, you will fall for anything. And it's days like this are very important to me.
Okay. Yeah, Bruce, again, thanks for the phone call. I mean, I go back to the point that Luan was making, which is that, you know, Bruce, when you're thinking about poverty as a bigger driver of inequality, look at what this country did through its power structures to create and sort of sustain poverty for large parts of our community for decades. 40s, 50s, 60s, with housing discrimination and all of the economic injustice that has happened over decades. Now, granted, I wasn't alive when that started. It doesn't mean it's gone entirely. But if we all want to say, well, I wasn't alive, then that wasn't me, then that ignores the root of what has led us to where we are in 2017. And that's why, you know, I think, as Chris said, I try to sit back and just listen and not try to invalidate someone's experience, particularly when we know what history has done there. So, go ahead.
I also want to add, too, you brought up the housing discrimination and things like that. And that's another piece of the education that's not often discussed at school. But I know you did a show where there was a teacher that talked about redlining, and Atim's in my class right now, and we talked about redlining. And that's also not something that's in the distant past. Just in the last couple of years, there was a bank locally that was fined for redlining and denying mortgages in certain areas to people that were black. And the same is true with the RCSD and the construction firms. That just recently, they were found to actively not be, I believe this is, I got this right, but I know that they were fined for not diversifying their workforces in the way that they promised to. And those are examples of structural and systemic racism that work to eliminate economic opportunity for people.
All right, listeners, we're talking about Friday. This coming Friday is Black Lives Matter at School, a day of understanding and affirmation in the Rochester City School District. It's a day that has been supported by the Board of Education, by the Rochester Teachers Association. Teachers are not required to present lessons on Black Lives Matter, but many will and are planning to do that. And that's what we're talking about with our guests. You just heard Chris Widmeyer, who is a science teacher at World of Inquiry School in Rochester. Luann Brown is assistant principal at Joseph C. Wilson Foundation Academy. She's a co-organizer. All the guests today are co-organizers of Friday's event. Marian Mustafa George is a parent. Atim Akung is a World of Inquiry senior. And again, all co-organizing this event. If you want to jump online and learn more about this in particular, what's coming up on Friday, you've got basic questions that probably a lot of people have had. They've got an FAQ part of the website. And one more time, the website, Chris, is
blacklivesmatteratschool.org.
Atschool.org. All right, Betty, next up on the phones. Go ahead, Betty.
Hi. I just wanted to talk about, I think this is great that we're taking a day out to say that Black Lives Matter. I also think that we need to do a better job of teaching real history in our schools. The fact that black people only get one day and that teachers will teach a whole year of history and mention maybe 10 black people is absolutely unacceptable. And I think that any teacher who's in our district needs to be on board with that. And if they're not, they need to find someplace else to work.
Betty, Luann just kind of gave a little, well, I don't want to out anybody here. There was a lot of reactions to Betty's phone call in studio. Luann, can I ask you to weigh in? What do you think?
I agree with her 100%.
Okay, I was going to say you gave a thumbs up. I didn't know if I was allowed to say that. But
no,
go ahead.
I agree with you 100%. And this is just not a one-and-done thing. We're actually going to be asking the district that when they're hiring teachers to come into our district, make sure that they have some type of training or cultural awareness of the students that they're working with. Because if your classroom does not reflect the students that you're working with, then you are not going to be able to get a student to learn. You need to understand where that student is coming from, what that student's history is. And if you don't, shame on you.
Let me read a couple of emails, and then we'll get back to the phones. Peg writes to the program and says, I am a white grandmother living in Irondequoit. My grandsons, also in this district, are currently ages 5 and 1. I definitely think that having this discussion in schools at all age levels, appropriate learning, obviously, is important and appropriate. After all, my white grandsons will grow to be white men, and they, too, need to be aware of inherent racism, consider it in their professional lives, regardless of their professions and in their personal lives. Thank you for doing this. That's from Peg. A listener identifies himself named Brother John says, schools should be more about a core curriculum. They should be helping our children prepare for the life ahead of them. I'm encouraged that the city schools are taking a time out to have this discussion. It's directly relevant to all students. That comes from Brother John. Back to the phones we go. Monica in Brockport is next. Go ahead, Monica.
Hello. I'm so glad, too, that you're having this discussion. Black lives matter more than anyone can ever imagine. And the reason people think it doesn't matter is that they think the playing field between black and white students is equal. And it has never been equal and is not equal. And as an example, my husband owned a small sporting goods store in the town of Brockport. He hired a black youth who was going to be the only person manning the small store. People said to my husband, do you think this is a good idea? Well, little did they know that he was a monumental success, And this had nothing to do with poverty. His parents were professors at the college at Brockport. And this young man not only manned the store honorably, he went on to be, he went on to Harvard and is a lawyer, a distinguished lawyer. And I can, I could talk for hours about the racism I have seen on, going on for decades. So Black Lives Matters. I'm a volunteer in the city school district. I have a degree in social work, and I work in the child protective areas. I've seen black and white children in similar situations. Some of it comes from poverty, but there's an institutional racism that keeps black people from achieving the same goals when they have the same intelligence as anyone else.
All right, Monica, thank you for the phone call. That's a bit of a rebuttal to Bruce's call earlier where he said it's mostly about poverty, it's not about race. And Monica's saying, you've got a child of two professors who came into my store and there were white people saying you shouldn't do that. I mean, I'm not picking on Bruce, who seems like a very nice guy, and Bruce, let's go to lunch. Let's talk more about this. But that's a strong statement, isn't it? You know, that people think, well, you can't do that. It's 2017. But let me grab another phone call, and Robert in Fairport is uncomfortable with some of what he's hearing. Go ahead, Robert.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just don't think it's the school's purpose to kind of align itself with a particular political movement. I mean, you have a school district where 5% of the students graduate ready for college. I mean, if they were graduating 95% ready for college, it might be a different situation where you could explore more experimental topics and whatnot. But I just don't think so. The other thing is, it just puts the school in a position where they're sort of preaching sort of a cult of victimization, kind of grievance grooming for the future. And it turns the school into sort of an indoctrination factory. If you look at what the Black Lives Matter statement is on their website, it says that they're an ideological and political intervention in a world where black lives are systematically and intentionally targeted for demise. I just think that's strong.
Okay, so Robert, hang there for a second, because to you, this is political. What our panelists were saying earlier is they don't view Black Lives Matter and what's going to happen on Friday in Rochester schools as political. You're saying you disagree. You find it political.
That's correct.
Okay, so stay there, and let's let our panelists respond to some of what they're hearing there.
I've
go ahead, Chris.
Had a chance to think of some of what you said just by reading some of the blogs and websites that have been out there that are in opposition to this, and I can't understand where you're coming from and what experiences you've had that have led you to these sorts of conclusions. In terms of the success rate in the Rochester City School District, that is something that needs to be addressed. And like Lawan said earlier, it's about knowing our students. And I come at it from that perspective that I need to know my students. I need to have a relationship with them before we can see any sort of success. And in terms of schools that have a 95% graduation rate, it doesn't matter what the races of the students are at those schools. They need to address the important social challenges that our country faces. And so that's where I'm coming from on this.
Luan?
And I believe our graduation rate is 43%.
He said college readiness.
Oh, college readiness. Okay, my fault.
But I don't know what the numbers are. I'm trying. I think Robert mentioned college readiness, but go ahead, Lauren.
So, but our graduation rate has increased, but it's okay, and it could be better. So, I do want to say that. And again, if you don't know who you're dealing with, and if you don't acknowledge that racism exists in our society, the one thing that the schools have not talked about, we've talked about Common Core, we've talked about getting students the basics and the standards and everything else that they need. But the one thing that we don't talk about in schools is students' culture, especially students of color in the urban district. That's never talked about. Perhaps this is the one nugget that we need to talk about, and we will see a difference in student academic achievement.
Luana, I think some of what Robert's saying when it comes to his concern about what he used the term victimization or kind of grievance grooming, what I often hear from people, and I don't know if Robert self-identifies, who's still in line with us, as conservative or not, but one of the concerns that I hear is if we raise kids to think that society is going to try to crush them, that they're less likely to be able to be convinced of their own ability to rise above. And again, I'm not endorsing any position. I'm just trying to kind of follow up on what I've heard often. What do you say to that?
I don't think we're raising kids to think that. It already exists in our society. We don't need to tell kids that. Society is already telling them that. If you look at what's going on in with our current, I don't want to get too political, but if you look at what's going on in regards to people of color and Muslims and things of that nature, society is already saying, we don't want you. And society for a long time has done things to African Americans, people of color, letting us know in advance that they're not particularly happy with us. And the system is set up in that way as well.
Okay. Maureen, what do you think?
I agree, and I would go back to the statement that we had as organizers, that this is a day to affirm and understand that Black Lives Matter at school. It's not political. It's a human issue, and that we are talking about people in our society and how we can do everything possible to affirm and to see them, to value them, and to say that they matter, that their trials and tribulations are ours as well.
Okay. Tim?
Well, being a student of the district, it does feel like at times that our culture is shut down at the door. I feel like Black Lives Matter isn't a movement that makes me feel like I'm weaker, but it makes me feel that I'm stronger. School is more than just a place for you to learn your math or English. It's a place to practice equality, build understanding, and I'm thankful to come from a school that does focus on these values so much. And I feel like that makes me a well-rounded citizen and student.
Let me go back to Robert, and I'm going to read an email from a listener that just came in response to his phone call. It's from a listener named Athesia. She writes, Black lives haven't mattered in America since before the first African was brought to America. African people were brutalized beyond belief during the Middle Passage. This is about institutionalized and systemic racism. If someone feels strongly against this endeavor, or even the name Black Lives Matter, they are the result of racism being swept under the rug and not being taught correctly in schools over the course of generations. And she goes on to say, if people have a negative knee-jerk reaction to this endeavor, they are probably blinded by their own white privilege and suffer from underexposure to non-white people during their formative years. That's from Athesia. So, Robert, what do you think?
I think that the troublesome thing here is saying that people that are not Black are intentionally targeting Black people for demise, and that's right from the Black Lives Matter website. I just think that paints a stereotype that if people are not Black, they're against you. And I just think that it's wrong. And I think this is a profoundly political movement. I'm sorry.
All right, Robert, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate that. Obviously, we've got some disagreement there, but, our panelists knew that was going to be part of this conversation. They understand that. Luan, you want to jump back in? Go ahead.
And I just want to make sure everyone knows that we are not part of the Black Lives Matter official national organization. This is a school thing.
Learn more at blacklivesmatteratschool.org about what's coming up this Friday. Again, it's been supported by the Rochester School Board and the Teachers Association. Teachers are not required to present lessons on Black Lives Matter on Friday. They're encouraged to think about that, and a lot of teachers will be doing that. And the organizers of this movement, of this day, I should say, who are all here in studio with me, are hoping that other schools do that as well, that other districts, doesn't just have to be Rochester. We'll see if that happens. I've got a lot of phone calls to get to, so let's get our only break of the hour, way late for that, and come back to your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, the confirmation of Betsy DeVos has pushed the conversation on school choice into the forefront. We'll talk about what Betsy DeVos's service to this country likely means for public schools, for public school students in urban areas, suburban areas, rural areas, everywhere. Betsy DeVos says parents deserve more choice in 2017, and she wants to give them that. We'll talk about it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Just want to let you know here, we're going to get through as many of your comments as we can before the end of the hour. There is a pile of them. Sarah writes to us and says, I'm a white parent in the Rochester City School District. I love this idea, love this day. I'm unsure as to why folks from outside our district have such strong opinions about this day if it isn't happening to or with their district. Sarah, I would just say to that, I don't think it's a bad thing that people outside Rochester care about Rochester. I mean, we want everybody to care about all parts of our community, but I understand the point that Sarah's making is a lot of the dissent seems to be coming from outside of the district. You
I agree.
Panelists, you agree with that?
I think, though, that we have heard things from people that live inside of the city.
Okay.
And it's also an interesting way of the way that we think about our community, that there's these lines that are drawn, and we all see, and the demographics reflect all of these different ideas about who lives in each area of our community. But, you know, the reality is that the community belongs to everybody, and it's something that all of us need to address and think about and see how we can take action to correct injustice.
All right, Sam in Rochester, next on the phone. Go ahead, Sam.
Thank you for taking my call. Evan, I had made a call last week, and I asked the lady to have you to look at the Steve Harvey Show and to watch the Ku Klux Klansman who was converted by the African-American, who the young boy who grew up in the Boy Scouts, but he didn't know anything about prejudice or racism, and they were throwing stones and stuff at them one day, and he thought they was throwing at the Boy Scouts, but when he went home, his parents had to explain to him they were throwing them at him. And he didn't understand that, and he got mad with his parents. But then to push the story forward, the Ku Klux Klansman told the African-American that it was in his DNA to do drive-bys. And so the African-American challenged the Ku Klux Klansman and said, well, if that's in my DNA, a DNA for you to become a serial killer is in your DNA. And I want to listen to this off words, but I have one more thing. We have the Secretary of Education, and the first African-American to get a doctorate, which is W.E.B. Du Bois. You can't spell his name right. You misspell it. And you want to be Secretary of Education, and they put you in that position to be Secretary of Education. That is somebody who is very important to the African-American community. And to have that done, I think, is just a little bit ridiculous. And then the question about how do you uneducate blacks, that if you get an education, you're going to be successful, because that's been the problem. You get the education, and you're still not successful because of the people that are in control. So go ahead. I'm going to listen to your response.
All right, Sam, thank you for the phone call. First of all, we're going to talk about Betsy DeVos's confirmation next hour. That's our conversation right here. We're going to have the president of the Board of Education of the Rochester City School District, among some other school leaders here. And so we will be talking about Betsy DeVos next hour. I think, as Megan Mack tells me, that the person that Sam is referring to is Daryl Davis. Is that right, Meg? That's the person? Okay, so what Sam is telling the story of an African-American musician named Daryl Davis who had basically a passion for meeting and befriending members of the KKK in an attempt to change their minds and forge racial conciliation one racist at a time. It's sort of the story. Sam, that is a fascinating story to me. I feel like, that's putting a lot of pressure on people like Daryl Davis to go, you know, try to convert people, as opposed to a society that's better educating people, that those are the types of, you know, the Dylann Roofs, the KKK, that we never see that to begin with. I don't know. It just feels, I'm amazed at Daryl Davis to do that as an African-American, to say, I'm going to go meet people from the KKK. We're going to talk. That's incredible. But that's a ton of pressure on one person. And the world should probably be, I don't know, I guess, Marianne, where am I going with this?
Where you're going is people are brave, and sometimes we have to be really brave to engage in these conversations. I personally would not want to engage in discussion with someone from the KKK right now.
And that's not fair to people of color, right?
I'm a woman of color.
For you to have to do that work.
Yeah. So sometimes when we talk about work like this, there are discussions that we need to have within our communities. And then we have also talked about within our organizing group about white folks leading the discussion with other white folks. And that's okay, too, to change people's minds within your own sphere of influence, but then also to cross over and have these conversations with people that don't look like you. And all those things are important.
Well, the story of Daryl Davis, who Sam's talking about, is part of a documentary that airs tonight on WXXI-TV. So you want to check it out, 10 o'clock tonight on WXXI-TV. It's called Accidental Courtesy. It is a remarkable story. It just feels like, you know, the onus does not have to be on people of color who've been the ones suffering from this inequality to fix it in the people who are creating the inequality. But remarkable story, if you want to check it out. That's tonight. Jim in Clarendon, volunteers for the RCSD. Is that right, Jim?
Yes, that's true, Evan. I go in on Fridays to one of the elementary schools I live out here in Orleans County, and I'm very supportive of this idea of what's going to happen on Friday. I have no idea what the teacher is going to do in the class that I volunteer in, but I hope this will be part of it. I mean, the class is very diverse, kids from all kinds of backgrounds, different languages, and I'm just looking forward to it.
Well, thank you, Jim. And you said you come in once a week, is that right?
That's right, right.
All right.
And the main reason I called was just to make the point that not everybody outside of the city school district has negative feelings about the Black Lives Matter effort within the school. And in fact, I would encourage people in suburban areas, if you have concerns about the quality of education in the city school district, find one to volunteer at.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Thoughts?
I just want to add on that there's an idea that Dr. King put out in his letter to Birmingham Jail that motivates me as well, and kind of along the lines that you felt like you had to call and speak up. One of the things he said is that he wasn't so disappointed by the racist. It was the moderate white people that he was really disappointed by, that he needed them to stand up and they weren't. And the religious leaders around him were actually telling him to take it easy, slow down. And that was something that he reflected on and something I think all of us can reflect on.
Mm-hmm. Mary writes to the program and says, Evan, great topic. Thanks. You don't have an elementary school classroom teacher or child development expert on the panel today, but I'm wondering, how should a teacher of young children, say 7-year-old second graders, bring up this topic to his or her students? Young children have a highly developed sense of fairness, and any emphasis on one group to the exclusion of another is difficult or maybe even impossible for some kids to understand. That comes from Mary. Mary, it's a fair question. Marianne, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, my daughter is in second grade, and we've had great discussions at school about this, and she's right. You know, sometimes we think about, at that age, we really want to bring our kids together, and kids really have a highly developed sense of moral justice, right? So you want to be careful about, you know, not making sure that you're not causing more anxiety about this stuff. One thing that we decided is that we would talk about restorative justice circles, which is something that the RCSD has developed, and a way to get all the kids talking without it feeling like a me versus you type situation. There's also great books that you can read to kids. Dr. Seuss's The Sneetches is a great one. That's easy to
access. That's going way back. I haven't read that in a long time.
Yeah, throwback TV. So there are ways to engage. If you go to our website and the RCSD website as well, they have resources broken up by age groups as well.
Kids really do at that age have an amazing sense of I just watching my 5-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, they understand fairness pretty well.
More than I think we do. Sometimes we cloud our judgment, but kids get right to the heart of it.
Yeah, great question, Mary. Rolf writes to us and wants to know. He says, my question is in regards to how teachers are planning to make it clear on Friday what the Black Lives Matter movement does and does not represent in this context. And Rolf says there have been many different perspectives and actions on what the Black Lives Matter movement means. How do you plan to make it clear to students that this is about equality and not some of the more radical perspectives associated with the movement?
I think we've tried our best to provide resources and lesson plans for people. There's on our website, the blacklivesmatteratschool.org, there are a few just introductory lesson plans that talk about Black Lives Matter just strictly from a historical point of view, where it came from, what the hashtag is all about, you know, and what's happened since the hashtag was first used. And there's also Teaching Tolerance at tolerance.org has a lot of resources for helping teachers and students deal with these ideas of identity and race and justice. So I would suggest that people go and use those resources. There's a lot out there to help you already, and we're trying our best to provide those to people.
CJ writes to us and says, I'm in favor of Black Lives Matter in schools, and I hope that this is also happening in the suburban districts. This needs to be taught, explained, reminded, and reinforced for all of us. I suspect that the value of Black Lives is better understood in Rochester than where my kids went to school, which is Webster. That's from CJ. In Pittsford, this is Lucienne. Go ahead, Lucienne.
Hello, thank you. First of all, I'd like to say that I agree with every word that Athesia Sidman said earlier on the air. And secondly, I would like to make a mention of Socrates' statement, one of his quotes that says, know thyself. Our history is important to us. Who we are is important to us. Where we have been is important to us. And where we are going, we'll be informed by knowing who we are and where we have been. And to, I like also to add to the conversation of the caller earlier who identified as Robert. What I would like to ask Robert, does he believe that a full year of white perspective in the classroom is also a form of indoctrination? Because of his argument, if teaching and making room for black history and black knowledge in the Know Thyself statement that I made earlier, if he believes that is indoctrination, he equally then just admitted that what is happening in the classroom, K through 12, is also a form of white indoctrination, because this is what the perspective is that's been taught is in the classroom. Again, going back to the statement that's been asked over and over, is Black Lives Matter a political positioning? It might as well be, because life itself is political. And in this country, you do need political capital as part of any liberation, of any action that is taken. Legislation that are passed are part of the political system. And what we're trying to change is a systemic problem. Therefore, it is a political problem. So I don't believe that Black Lives Matter should shy away from the fact that they do have a political positioning, because we are also looking at a systemic problem. Therefore, we're looking at regulations, we're looking at legislation, we're looking at laws. So it is a political base as well. That's what I believe.
All right, Lucien, thank you very much. Anybody want to respond to what they just heard there?
There is a lot to unpack there. One thing that struck out to me was Chris and I attended, and Lauren was there, a community training session yesterday. And one thing that we learned, it was in regards to Black Lives Matter at school, we learned that Black education and Black history that's taught in schools, it's not addressed in schools. And this whole issue of learning for Black children and all of us to learn another history that we're not really, we don't have access to that right now. And when we leave out pertinent facts about Black history, then are we saying that Black lives matter?
Tim, I'm sorry. Tim, did you want to jump in too?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the time our history lessons start with African Americans. We started from slavery, which is not the case. There's so much more history than that, and we're not taught that. So sometimes when all you hear is that your people came from boats and ships, you kind of forget that you do matter, mm-hmm. and you do need that reminder that you started from somewhere else. You didn't start from that.
Okay. Luan?
And I just wanted to add a personal perspective. I graduated from Pittsford Mennon High School, and I did not have any type of perspective or history, African American history at all. I had to go out and research that on my own. So this is an opportunity for students not to have to go out on their own, but to actually get it from their school.
All right, let's squeeze in two more listener comments. Eve says, Evan, thanks for shining a light on Black Lives Matter this hour. It seems that the more this is talked about, the more people dig in their heels and hold their positions. But this is a human rights issue, and as a white woman, I am really angered by people who continue to deny that we have institutionalized racism in this country. How much proof do people need? We see it every day. We know that African Americans have been denied equitable education, access to good education. They are more likely to be stopped by police. I see it in Facebook posts. Horrible comments were made about the Obama family. I would say that it has now been more exposed since recent political campaigns. She mentions Donald Trump, and she says, I'm glad the school is bringing this to the forefront. Thank you for covering this topic. That comes from Eve. Last phone call of the hour is Jim in Rochester. Jim, got to make it tight. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Jim Thompson from Rochester, New York. I'm in my 60s. Our kids graduated from Rochester City School District. We had to work really hard to get our teachers to teach them anything about black people. Most white people don't realize how the whole economic engine of this country was based on racism. Without the slave trade, there wouldn't have been the ways to work with pulling cotton up to the manufacturing processes in the North. So the North as well as the South benefited by that. And of course, it's already been mentioned earlier in this program about how there were things like redlining and the school-to-prison pipeline. One reason I'm going on Friday is because I want to reach some of the young people there before they get caught into the school-to-prison pipeline, to let them know that they are important, that their contribution and the contribution of black people is important. It doesn't demean white people. It's time for white people to understand and really own up to the fact that this country has a racist background, and it may seem difficult for people to understand. We need to have those difficult conversations. Please, people, come out to the conversations on race that are held at the library. There are groups for white people to help understand this surge is when, S-U-R-J, I believe it is.
And Jim, let me just jump in because we're going to run out of time. I certainly appreciate some of the sentiments. I want to ask the assistant principal on the panel, Luan, just to remind us, what's coming up Friday? About 30 seconds, and what are your hopes for Friday?
My hopes for Friday is open dialogue and for people to feel comfortable talking about race. And this is just phase one. We've got to move on and do more as far as training and workshops.
So we're going to see Black Lives Matter in School. The full name for the day on Friday at RCSD is Black Lives Matter at School, a day of understanding and affirmation. If you want to learn more, check out blacklivesmatteratschool.org. And I want to thank all of our panel for being here. Luan Brown, Assistant Principal at Joseph C. Wilson Foundation Academy, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Chris Widmeyer is a science teacher at World of Inquiry. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much.
Marine Mustafa George is a parent, among so many other things, of course.
Thank you.
Marine, thank you.
Thanks.
Atima Kung, student activist and a senior at World of Inquiry, thank you to you as well.
Thank you.
A lot of listener feedback. And you know what? I think Luan's right. This conversation doesn't start and stop on Friday. Let's get our only break in the middle of these 2 hours, and we're going to come back and talk about the next Secretary of Education. That's Betsy DeVos.